You look at the blue one, which is DeepSeek V3, and then clearly it looks like, you know, they are outperforming the other ones.
So what is the real cost,
right?
Do we believe the Chinese or not?
What all does it mean from an ecosystem point of view? What all opportunities were looking that they are like done have now got reopened again?
I would say there's not been more than 8, 10, maybe 12 investments in native AI companies born out of India that have happened in 2024 in excess of $3 million. What will be the ChatGPT moment of India?
Get into this Wingify acquisition news. It's very, very interesting. It's a $200 million acquisition buyout of a bootstrapped company.
I actually use this framework more to design what is the market that you are playing in and whether you should then raise venture capital or not, or how much venture capital should you raise.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 12 of the Asymmetric Podcast. I have with me my regular partners in crime, Revant and Chirag, but also I have a very special guest, Akrit. Akrit heads the think tank for India AI, working with the government, is the founder of Haptic, and has been in the center of AI for much longer than since it's become a buzzword. But this week has been crazy. Today's episode is largely centered around everything that has happened in the last 1 week. And we are actually quite scared that between the shooting of the episode and the airing of the episode, another whole set of developments might happen that will make this episode kind of redundant. But we have seen DeepSeek get launched. Massive, across metrics, they have kind of made the world wake up and take notice. It's become existential for a lot of the large company AI models. NVIDIA has lost, a chunk of its market cap because, you know, people are questioning whether this kind of GPUs are even needed and what it means for India. So, for the founder ecosystem, for people who want to build in India, for venture. So this whole host of topics that we want to kind of unpeel with Akrit. And of course, beyond that, we do have our discussion on Wingify's acquisition by Everstone, as well as our 10-minute update on health. I'm coming here personally after sleeping only 4 hours after a birthday celebration. So on the health one, I'll probably take a back seat. But this is the exciting episode we've lined up, and really hope you enjoy.
I think there's a very interesting development in the field of AI, which is starting to happen, which has shook all of us, including, you know, everyone who's watching the AI space deeply. Is that China has released this new LLM model called DeepSeek. You know, I'm sure most of us would have heard at least the term over the last 1 week. I think it's like spreading like fire over internet in terms of what's happening. Just to give a quick overview, I think it's a LLM model which was released by China called DeepSeek V3. Apparently, it has outperformed top LLM like GPT-4o and Claude 3.5. on a wide range of leading benchmarks. The interesting part is that at least they are claiming that they've spent less than $6 million worth of compute to do this, which is quite phenomenal. What it means is that DeepSeek's AI assistant, powered by DeepSeek V3, has overtaken rival ChatGPT to become the top-rated free application on Apple's App Store in the United States. Right, so multiple benchmarks have been broken in the last 1 week. I'll just pull up my screen just to show you a few things. So this is one of the graphs which indicates that how is the blue one is DeepSeek 3 performance across some of these globally accepted parameters for LLMs. You know, you look at the blue one, which is DeepSeek V3, and then you have different other LLMs which are there. Clearly, it looks like, you know, they are outperforming the other ones. And the interesting part is, that it has taken them less than $6 million to train. You know, not looking at the overall cost, but if we compare, I think the comparison to OpenAI and Anthropic, the comparison is like 1-2000x. So huge amount of capital has gone in US in terms of training this. There are various different, you know, arguments are now being made that necessity is the mother of all invention. There was an export ban on chips, which has led to this. They were constrained and hence they innovated, which led stock markets reacted. NVIDIA's down 16%. Google was down 3.5%. Microsoft down 3.5%. And these are like magnificent 7 companies, very, very large in nature. You know, you can see NVIDIA fall after the DeepSeek triggered in the AI market. what company, I think Meta has gained because they have always been saying that this is the world of open AI, open source. So they have gained. They were the only stock which was up. Apparently, in my view, you know, it looks like that all companies in long term will gain, except for Google, who has a lot to lose from, search. Overall, many, many ramifications of this in terms of, you know, what we were seeing that the game is already sealed, wherein there are these large foundational model companies such as OpenAI, which were much, much ahead, had burnt a lot of money in terms of building out these LLM models. But looks like the game is already open. Today, we have a very, very exciting friend, expert from the field of AI, who's leading the India mission on AI, Akrit, who joins us to share his views in terms of what he's seeing in this, what is the real truth, what is the deep down of this, and what does it mean for India? Welcome, Akrit. Super, super excited to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. The first thing I always say is let's not, you know, I think nobody is an expert in AI. And it has been proven even more true over this last couple of weeks.
Would love to understand, Akrit, that first let's understand the situation. That how are you reading the overall development?
Yeah. No, man, it's been a crazy couple of weeks, honestly. This all actually started, it became very popular in mainstream media last 5-6 days. But actually, a lot of the action is almost 4-5 weeks old. And it all started when DeepSeek actually released their previous model, which was called DeepSeek V3. So V3 came out around the last week of December, I want to say. And that was the first time they basically said that we've trained this foundation model on a budget of $5.5 million. So that's really when everybody started taking attention. So it's actually been going on for a month. What happened in R1, which is what blew everybody's minds, was the cost remained the same, or at least when we come to what they're claiming and what might be actually true. But let's say the claim cost remained the same, but the benchmarks and the performance was as good as any other model out there. And that really is what shook the world, over these last 5-6 days, that look, if, you know, at that claim cost of a few million dollars, you can build a model as good as O3 or OpenAI, then, you know, everything that we thought about building models, infrastructure, cost, maybe, you know, not true or may have to be sort of rethought of. And if that is the case, then everything on top of what gets built in AI, which is whether it's apps or companies or services, they need to be again rethought of. And I think a lot of it is still being digested and figured out and understood real time.
So are you saying that the December end model, while they released it and the claim was that they developed it for $5.5 million, it was not as good and therefore people didn't sit up and take notice? Is that what happened?
It was pretty good, but it didn't meet or beat O3, which is the, call it state of the art today, in most benchmarks.
Got it.
And actually, some of it was also just, noticed it, but didn't notice it, took some time, media took some time to catch on to it. So I think, and actually the other thing also was, if you notice, we've all been broadly familiar, right? OpenAI releases new models every now and then, but their new model shipping is 3-6 months.
Yeah.
V3 to R1 was about 20 days. And now there's rumors that R2 is coming out very shortly as well. So it was also the pace at which they were able to get some of these things out, which was like, okay, look, you know, we noticed a little bit of what they were doing in maybe December, but maybe we missed what they are really doing and the world got attention.
Very interesting. This really puts there's the Rajan Anandan clip doing the rounds now where, you know, when Sam was in India, he had asked that, you know, a bunch of engineers in India with $10 million can build foundational models, and he said it's hopeless. Clearly, it was not hopeless, seems like. Or is there a question mark on the $5 to $6 million claim that the company has done?
Yeah, man. That's the golden question to answer, right? Look, that's what I tried to sort of do a little bit in some of the public comments the last couple of days. I think cost will come to in a second, right? Complicated answer, right? But I think the biggest real insight for India as a country or Indian engineers is that the way DeepSeek has built their last two models and the way they're engineering everything that they're going about It's very interesting, right? So what they are doing is, they are not going back and doing fundamental AI research. So they are, let's say, not going and saying that ground up, we will think about something completely new, which may take, a few years of sitting in a lab and actually doing hardcore research, which, let's say, there's only about a few thousand people in the world who know how to do. And as a result, they're very expensive. And the very, very, very limited supply. And that's sort of that real talent war that's going on in Silicon Valley.
Also requires data, I'm assuming. A huge data set to train the models on. Which is what I think, Indian, if I look at the last 2 years, a bunch of deals that happened between OpenAI and data source companies, to call it that, right? Access to data to train. Is that something that also they have done some innovation on?
Yeah, so it's related, right? So I'm just coming to both the talent and data, like you said, is like the bigger ones. So on the talent side, what's interesting is what they took a view is, and it's linked to data. So when they started experimenting 2 years back in March 2023, they said that, look, now no longer we need to do the base work again. March 2023, there is already GPT 3.5 out there, GPT 4 coming. What can we do on top of this? So what they did is they basically have been repeatedly using GPT as the underlying model to generate the data. So synthetic data has become one of the biggest ways in which you can train a model because the internet ka data is only so much and it's limited. Most models, the last few models are 60-70% synthetic, 30-40% sort of real data, right? DeepSeek really took this from inception to heart. And whoever took that call, made that call, whether it was their founder, whether it was their chief scientist, that was a genius call, right? And that was their intuition, combination of things. That's a skill, I guess, that you just learn after years and years of just being in math and science, which is that we will build on top. So what they did is, instead of requiring expensive AI research scientists, they needed just a crack team of amazing engineers and math professionals who knew that, okay, look, once I generate this data, how do I make it most efficient to build a model? So imagine what they've been doing for the last 2 years in a very crude manner, right? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of engineering they've done. But in a crude manner, is basically prompting OpenAI. Like, you know, going in and saying that, okay, listen, can I get this data set? Can I get that data set? Can you give me data for this? Can you give me data for that? Like, it's literally what they have been experimenting on. And then generating that data these models, predominantly OpenAI's models. Once the data is there, then it's a game of just, you know, DevOps, infra, engineering, hacking almost, experimentation. Can we try this? Can we do this? Can we do this? To ultimately build a model. So where I was going with this was, and why I was saying it's for India, it's super interesting data. I'll come to in a second. But the talent, right? We, like, I don't know how many of these Twitter threads, and again, last few weeks, all this nonsense that is going on. We don't have PhDs. We can't do research. Our academia, our labs. Forget that conversation. I'm not even saying that is right or wrong, right? I'm not qualified enough to know what Indian academia and PhD and research looks like. All I'm saying is maybe you don't even need that anymore, right? You just need three engineers who have known how to do crazy infra and DevOps at scale, easily available in India, right? Between the OTT apps that have scaled like hundreds of millions of users, there are two, some of the e-commerce apps that have managed such big capacity. You have that. You need, sort of a team of just some great software engineers, right? Who can decipher code, run code, experiment, iterate. Again, available. And you need a team of just people who understand logic and maths, which is data science, which is also not very hard to find. As long as you put like 30, 40 of these people together, that's the unlock for me for India specifically, where that is now possible because the earlier foundation models like OpenAI's have gotten to a degree where you can build on top of them.
So Akrit, just unpacking this, I think this is very interesting, from overall, not only India, but global ecosystem also. Like we were saying that there are these winners, large companies, and then there will be application companies which will win, right? So the parallel I draw is that, you know, in car manufacturing, there are companies who do engines and then who do cars, right? There are very handful of companies who do engines, right? It looks like that some of this engine making also can be democratized to an extent, right? Explain it to the viewers that, you know, what all does it mean from an ecosystem point of view? What all opportunities were looking that they are like done have now got reopened again. Maybe that's, let's unpack that. I think that's going to be very, very beautiful in terms of opportunities which lie ahead globally as well as then for India.
Yeah. So, I think this is, I'll maybe share the India context a little bit, right? So, when I left my role as CEO of Haptik last year, I was thinking about, sort of what next, what to build, how to build and so on, right? And then even for me as an entrepreneur, some of these, it wasn't quite obvious that sort of what's that unlock I will have from an India perspective. How will we build? Is it mostly just SaaS 2.0 built in India for the world? And that's precisely the reason where I was still discovering this opportunity came along at India AI Mission to really learn and see the vantage point, right? But what's happening and where are some of these gaps that Indian founders can build? And till now, it's been, I would say somewhat of a iterative struggle, honestly, right? Where, just a few weeks back, we were, Revant and I were also together and we were chatting about the same thing. That in 2024, the amount of AI activity from a startup creation ecosystem standpoint has been nothing, relative to what's going on in the world. I think from my, at least anecdotal calculation, when I looked at stuff, I would say there's not been more than 8, 10, maybe 12 investments in native AI companies born out of India that have happened in 2024 in excess of $3 million. That's one a month that has an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And we all have been wondering why. And I don't know if I have an answer, but I have a hypothesis on why that's the case. And this, you'll have to bear with me a couple of minutes because this is sort of fairly deeply thought over like a couple of years. I think the reason why that's been a challenge is because we've been very far away from the fundamental R&D. So what I see happens regularly when I interact with a lot of my friends and just colleagues in the Bay Area, right, is that the pace of work over there moves so fast that the tribal knowledge in the ecosystem of developers and founders is far higher than here. There's a running joke amongst all of us who work in AI in India that by the time I wake up my views only hold till 10 p.m. every day, because when I wake up at 9 a.m., one day has passed in the U.S. and my views are going to change again. And that tribal knowledge is like, you guys have been, let's say take in D2C as an industry where you guys have been operating. Right, that India D2C, all of you, the way to do it, there's a lot of insights and knowledge that you cannot get unless you're doing some of the groundwork yourself. Like infrastructure on D2C has also been built by a lot of you guys over here. As a result, you know how to build the businesses on top. So our founders, I think, have struggled with that so far, which is that I'm always playing catch up. Right? I'm always trying to play catch up, even on the app layer, because the app layer also is moving so fast and the advancements are so far ahead that I'm just like worried that what's going on and how am I going to keep up with it. Secondly, and this is a very interesting nuance where a lot of people may disagree with me. I built a SaaS company before this, and I noticed that in SaaS 1.0, if you take the era of 2010 to roughly 20, software and enterprise was never the cool thing to do in Silicon Valley. The cool thing in Silicon Valley in 2008, 10, 11 was social media. Then it became the hyperlocal Ubers, DoorDashes of the world. Then it became crypto for a little bit. Software was left for Israelis, Indians, Europeans who wanted to enter. So we had that white space.
हमने एक शॉर्ट तरीका बता दिया, अब बाकी लोग बना लेंगे.
हाँ, हम मतलब the cool 23-year-old, 21-year-old getting out of Stanford, hacking over there is not thinking about how am I going to go and sell to Bank of America. He's thinking about in those days, how do I build the next photo sharing Instagram? That's completely changed. In these last 2 years, Chirag, essentially now AI agents are the coolest thing to do in the valley. Like it's like as cool as it ever gets. And AI agents by default are B2B. At least the current go-to market. So now B2B software is, whatever you call software today, is suddenly the most exciting thing. So that's the second reason where combined the tribal knowledge and now the smartest minds of, say, Berkeley, Stanford and others working on this, we've kind of been locked out a little bit. And it's been harder, genuinely, for Indian founders to find those white spaces, find those insights that nobody else will know. You'll have some differentiation on to build and compete against some of these folks. Pause here before maybe how some of this DeepSeek stuff changes that.
I think it's an excellent summarization of why maybe we've not seen that innovation. But if you look at the India perspective, if there is a country that leads automation, like we just spoke about agentic software, right? Its best application of reducing dependence on human beings to do work and having more and more software do the job. In fact, even developing that. And I think coding, high quality coding in India is now as expensive as a lot of other markets, right? The need of the hour is for India to actually do a lot of this innovation. And if anything, DeepSeek's presumed success with by releasing these models that perform so well should inspire us the innovation ecosystem as well as the venture ecosystem to maybe take a few more bold steps in that direction. Because clearly, even if I, like we discussed this in the last episode as well, there was this McKinsey report that India has 30 years old to get rich before we get old. I don't think we're going to get rich by doing the same menial software tasks, if I can call it that, that we have been doing for so long. As part of the India AI mission, as part of the team that's advising the Indian government on what should be the course of action for us, how do you see this pan out with, you know, what should the government, whatever you can talk about, right? I mean, there are some things I'm sure that are under wraps on what you're doing with the government, but what is your broad guidance to the ecosystem of both founders, builders, as well as investors?
So, look, I think absolutely relevant to your point. This is a big revolution in just the evolution of AI, right? Like I said this yesterday that DeepSeek is the biggest inflection point in the evolution of AI since ChatGPT. So 2.5 years, this is now the next big moment. And I used to keep asking this question internally all the time and keep wondering that what will be the ChatGPT moment of India where we will get like something that we can build on top of. And it's funny, I don't know, maybe the ChatGPT moment of India has been provided by the Chinese for now, which is that this sort of proof that, and again, we'll come to cost later. Let's say it's 10x the cost. Let's say it's 15x the cost. It's not $1 billion, right? And also back to the talent point, it does not need, these, you know, crazy AI scientists. It doesn't require these crazy AI scientists that we have to bring from, I don't know where in the world, right? Combine these two things, it's a very interesting unlock for us. And so, based on all of that, at least on the India AI mission, earlier this week, we announced, it's been in the works for a while, it was obviously part of the official cabinet note, but we announced a call for proposals for building foundation models for India. This essentially will be, a program in which India AI mission will fund building of these models. This funding initially will be based on grants. And then over a period of time, there are, you know, various funding models that we are open to, including potentially taking equity or continuing grants or figuring out credits that we can provide for simply compute. And this has anyways been in the works for a long time from a government standpoint. Like I said, it was already in the official cabinet note at the mission level 1 year back that we will build foundation models. I just think that all of us got a lot more confidence over these last four, six. Actually, this all started for us. I mean, as you can imagine, government, we can't move things in 2 days, right? So this happened actually, back to my point, we started thinking about this mostly, not seriously. We got more confidence when DeepSeek V3 came out last week of December. And that's when we said that, look, you know, even if it is 10x, even if it is 15x, that's fine. It's budget that we have allocated and it's something that we want to enable. And hopefully we can get multiple out of these and not just one.
Awesome.
That is a great idea because also I think if you look at some of the innovations, the big innovations from a startup ecosystem standpoint have happened with government push in the last 10 years, whether it's ONDC or UPI. I think it's the government coming together with enterprise builders and people like yourself who have been able to create it. And I think you make a very important point about tribal knowledge about a particular space, right? And given that this may not be, this will require a certain cleverness of engineering and then an ability to sell, you know, AI agent softwares to companies at a world level. I think India has actually proven over the last 30 years that we do that part really, really well at a DNA level, right? So you put these two things together, I think the opportunity is massive for us to like kind of clever engineer this over the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, and now imagine, right, that let's say if we're able to get... you know, there are many things when it comes to building some of these ecosystem things. And again, taking the analogy of D2C, right, you guys have probably experienced this yourselves. I've also, to some degree, in AI, even though we've not had a very vibrant ecosystem here, you need role models, right? Like as a young founder starting out, today's role model is maybe one or two companies, right? You need somebody who you can go to, ki ye kaise kiya? Right? Abhi wo hai nahi yahan pe, right? And all said and done, sure, I can call my, as a founder, it's very easy for, and I'm not going into VC bashing right now, but it's, you know, it's very easy for VCs to say, no, you go na, spend 1 month in Silicon Valley. Nahi hota yaar. It's tough.
Who says that?
Shantanu, I've heard this myself. I want to go to China and see what's happening.
And see.
No, in B2B software, in B2B software, this is a going saying.
Yeah,
in B2B software, it is a very common thing that every VC says that, great, we'll do this. When are you going to the US? And please spend the summer over there. Right?
Wow.
And I've been, by the way, side note, I've been amazed in this B2B SaaS world. I have to give it to Indian founders.
Yeah.
I do not work as hard as I think any some of these people have. My portfolio of angel plus my peers have seen 6 months US, 6 months India. Kids are 6 and 4 or 5 and 7, and they are seeing half their parents half the year. More than that, living alone, living separately. I don't know how people do it. On average, 10 p.m. work starts even in India, right? And I find it amazing that's become normal in the B2B world. I mean, it's great in one way, but you know, I have other reasons why it should not be as normal, right? Like it should not be like now VC's expectations ki aap yahi karoge, right? So even in AI, it's very standard terms. When are you moving to the US? Please go spend a few months there, learn, come back. And it's hard, right? Your cultural understanding of the country, your confidence level in the country. Like yahan pe matlab, you know, it's very different. Bhai bhai mein, matlab, you know, it's very very different conversation to have versus there. You're going in trying to talk to like some woke dude from Berkeley who's still identifying him or you know, it's hota nahi hai, right? So these things, you know, the ecosystem is built on things like role models, platform companies. And you're right, UPI was an amazing feat. And that's been our effort. And I mean, that's honestly what was my number one reason for doing this India AI mission was, you know, can we unlock the ecosystem through some sort of a UPI-ish approach, right? Even though it may approach may look different. And this foundation model announcement is along those lines.
Is there a thought, Akrit, that like if we are developing multiple models, so we don't want to have like the India stack in this? Or I thought there would be like an India foundational model, which will be technically owned / managed by the government. Is that the thought? Or is it like, let's just spark the innovation and see where the ecosystem picks it?
Today, it's the latter.
Got it.
Today, it is part of the ecosystem. We went back and forth on this quite a bit just for all of us here. But today, it is part. It's, and honestly, our take was this, and you know, happy to share this was one of my takes that hopefully sort of, you know, everybody agreed with. Was we don't know where all of this is going.
You know, so you may own a foundational model, but if it doesn't turn out to be the best over time because the things change so fast, you don't want to commit to anything today. Let's just keep building and see where it goes.
Yeah, this clearly says that please build your foundation models. You own them. And we will give a grant for models that we fund to a certain degree. We will try to get a perpetual license.
Makes sense.
Correct. So today, so that it, you know, this also gives the ability for people to, more people to show up, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, then you're not working for the government.
Yeah. Right?
Then basically you are building capabilities that the government is, you know, creating sort of schemes for you to do. And sure, of course, after that, the government has to benefit from it in some shape or form. But right now, some of that is open. And like I said, we don't know where it's, things are moving so fast. It's, if you look at the way we've designed just all of this call for proposals, it's very it's open in general because it's just evolving so fast.
And that also would mean that in some way you could potentially have the government as a client itself. Like, you know, because of the foundation model works, I'm sure the government would want to do a lot of national infrastructure building on top of some of the best models if they see the potential as well.
100%, absolutely. And that's been the model that, you know, a lot of the US and China have done for ages, right? Whenever they release any deep tech, if you look at Palantir as an example in the US and China, where there's plenty, but that we don't know about, where they've always done this, which is that deep tech, you know, government becomes a procurer or a customer initially, that drives, you know, initial innovation.
Super. Do you think, for example, I was at T-Hub in Andhra, I don't know, in Hyderabad, I don't know if you guys have seen that, but I love an intent of government is so, like, so if you guys have not been there, they have a whole set of labs that does 3D modeling and engineering of models for anyone who's making anything in the D2C or anything which is, you know, hardware. You can just build out models in a day and it's all the government's putting in, and they have like crazy amount of infrastructure that they've put in place for founders to come be a part of it and do it well. And you believe, Akrit, that this kind of government intent will attract the kind of talent that's needed to create that 0-1 spark tribal environment that some innovation of this nature will require?
Hope so. I mean, that's the idea behind the India AI mission, is to sort of create that initial spark and then hopefully let the ecosystem fly. By the way, T-Hub, it's amazing, very inspiring. I've been saying, I think we need 20, 30 more T-Hubs across the country, in every state. I think it's a great, great model. And you're right, the government was very clear on intent. There's never a time where the government was really building their IT infrastructure in that state. I think back to your point, I think the idea is, you know, look, you know, the other thing for some of these things is, like you said, T-Hub, right? One is, okay, T-Hub is nice and I will go work at T-Hub and I will work in the lab. The second is, it makes a young entrepreneur believe that the government is invested. You know, so with these models, like, or with this bit that we're doing at India AI Mission, even if talent doesn't come to us for whatever, at least now they will believe, okay, ho sakta hai. Right? I mean, when the government is invested and the government is either behind us or they believe this can be done, okay, for whatever reason, I don't want to engage with the government entity, because sure, a lot of founders may have that view. But no, ye ho sakta hai, so let me go try to figure out how I can do it myself, which is also great. We've done our job. Cheez I do want to call out, we kept parking this away, which was this cost question of DeepSeek. You know, I do want to touch upon that, sorry, but I think it's very important to put into perspective. So what is the real cost? Right? Do we believe the Chinese or not? I think the following statements is all what I believe to be true. First, the training cost of what it took to train that specific model was 6 million. But they've been at it for 2 years.
People cost.
They would have probably trained 50 models by now.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe not 50, maybe 20, 30, but they've clearly trained, they've gotten here through experimentation. So if you add up the 2 years of training cost of 10, 15 models, that's not 6 million anymore, right? So the total investment gone into getting here is orders of magnitude. But the second statement is, it's not a billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because utna access GPUs ka mil nahi sakta, right? Because of the straight sanctions. There is access available. And by the way, there was an interesting thing. If you look at NVIDIA's public filings, one of the largest growing markets in the last couple of years has been Singapore.
Hey.
Who's building models in Singapore? Right? So that's clearly acting as a
conduit.
As a channel. But it's still, they don't, they, no way that any Chinese lab has OpenAI level GPU. So if you take 10 more, 6, 7, 8, 10 models, training costs, 2 years, it's about 10x of total capex gone into getting you. Second, it's not 100x still, so that still ho sakta hai is very true. And third, exactly, people cost are not been added. These are all hedge fund-ish professionals who stepped out, so they're still expensive in China. But now I think the next few, if I can see where DeepSeek is going with this, I think the next few runs are going to be two things. One, they're going to make it even more efficient. And then the second is that the talent, they're not, you know, now they've realized that, look, it's this type of talent required. So they will also, you know, get talent in a way that doesn't necessarily is hedge fund level talent. So summary is, it is 10, 15x probably, maybe even more in what's gone in. But against that, what is it? OpenAI's current burn is 5 billion a year.
Burn.
The funniest thing was, I think most of the OpenAI loss on compute was because DeepSeek was using. That's just crazy, right? Like, they have leveraged. Actually, that's the beauty, right? They have leveraged the venture capital risk of the US and use that capital and that inference loss that OpenAI or multiple other models are incurring and train their models on that. So it's just crazy how, as you said, necessity is the mother of invention. So what if they have maybe 1/10 or 1/20 the number of GPUs through the black market that they have sourced? But at least they have said, okay, we have access to your GPUs via your own models. That's what we'll then use in some way.
No, that was just crazy. Even when I read that and I actually looked at the math also, it was insane, which is that not only if I built on top of you, but for every run that I did to generate data, you lost money.
Yeah.
Because on a unit level, you're losing money on inference. That was hilarious.
I also feel like while we can build on top of this and, you know, it'll be great for us to kind of do that, I do feel like India is taking steps on the R&D and research capabilities. I don't know whether you've been to ICTS in Bangalore. ISC and TIFR have been like kind of places where fundamental research and the pure sciences has been kind of ahead of the curve, but applications in the real world have kind of been lagging. We find it in pockets like space research, for example. Our ability to do, like, that's what they said about DeepSeek is China's Chandrayaan moment, right? Ability to do something at very low cost. But if you see ICTS, it's Mr. Gopakumar, at his time, JEE rank 1, Princeton PhD, like, you know, trained Nobel laureates, and he's built out India's Princeton in Bangalore. And we must, like, it blew my mind how under the radar some of these things are. But every week there's a Nobel laureate there kind of doing, you know, interest sessions for people in the academic world. It's very far away from the enterprise and, you know, kind of capitalist world for a while until it becomes useful. But my view is that I do feel like even on this front, we are actually far ahead of what we were 10 years back. Like, there are genuine academic stalwarts who are realizing that India has to be ahead of the curve and coming and working. And given that you are kind of at the center of government and industry in a way, I think just adding the trifecta of academia to this would, in this world, especially in the world of math and computer science, I think we may not be as far behind as we think.
No, 100%. Yeah, no doubt. Good takeaway from me. I'll check out ICTS for sure. But definitely. By the way, the GPT, the T in the GPT is Transformers. So Transformers was the original architecture on which all of this craziness started, you know, back in 2017. The Transformers paper was written by a Google research team, out of which five people, two of which are Indian origin, native from India. One went to Pune Engineering College. And one went to, I want to say, somewhere, either Kerala or Tamil Nadu, if I'm not mistaken. They both went after 23, 24 for their masters. And they ended up in Google and writing the paper on which all of this happened, right? So absolutely, 100%. Now, how do you make sure that these people don't go back, stay here? That's another podcast. But, you know, the in academia, the tribal knowledge is absolutely there. And it's a lot of these professors who have built it. Perplexity Arvind,
yeah,
IIT Madras graduate, 2017. His advisor for his fourth year project is this gentleman by the name of Professor B. Ravindran, who still very much is at IIT Madras. And we at India AI Mission chat with him a lot for lots of things.
Yeah.
And IIT Madras Research Park is also phenomenal.
Yeah.
The challenge has been, which again, it's a little early for me to know what, I don't have the why over there. The challenge that's very obvious is that their academia-industry partnership in India has not been as vibrant as, let's say, some of these other countries, right? US and China, even Canada for that matter. I think here, how do you get these professors out of, you know, the research into sort of production and applications and companies is a problem.
My brother did his PhD at Stanford in computer science. And, you know, like, there's a different, like, whenever I used to visit him, you enter the Hewlett Hall of Engineering, there's a huge bookshelf, you know, textbooks written by our professors who are Nobel laureates, a full shelf of books. And you walk past these classrooms, you know, and they're the ones teaching there. And I think if and you see them kind of angel invest in Google, and, you know, there are so many of these stories that professors who kind of found their PhD student and kind of invested in them and then became billionaires and all that. I think if we are able to do that, we actually will actually create better teaching talent in our top institutes. But I also think that a lot of the flow of money between these three, like, you know, enterprise, academia and government, will become a lot less frictional and incentivize the right way. I do feel like the academic leg is something that we need to work on, for sure.
Actually, wahan pe Chantanu, the integration was very early because most of the biggest LPs in VC and PE funds is Stanford, Harvard, Wharton, etc. Right? Their endowments are the largest LP base for everybody. So if you see the endowments, and therefore what you're talking about, right? The professors and the teachers and the students, they get exposed to innovation as an industry much very differently compared to India.
But aap ye socho na Revan, agar aap IIT Bombay computer science mein stud prof ho, you have access to, like, the closing rank there is under 50.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing for the access. I'm saying the mentality that first for kids to immediately start, wo nahi tha, ab wo ho raha hai, because we have obviously created some value in the last 10-15 years. Second, for them to consider and go to their professor and say, ki, yaar, sir, aap angel invest karo karke, because I'm starting immediately as soon as I'm in college. See, first of all, people finish, they've joined McKinsey or Unilever, then they join Amazon, and then they're like, main zindagi mein kya kar raha hun? Then they start out. Right? by that time, they're two away from college. Whereas what happens
I
there?
Right? I really hope now you're right. I really hope, yeah.
What India needs to change is, if I have to draw, Akrit has been saying, aap log D2C expert ho. हम लोग जो है ना फर्स्ट क्लिक एट्रीब्यूशन ले रहे हैं अभी भी कि पैदा यहाँ हुए थे पढ़े यहाँ थे वेर एज वॉट काउंट्स इज और वॉट हैज़ मोर वैल्यू इज़ द लास्ट क्लिक कि कहाँ पे जाके वैल्यू क्रिएट कर रहे हो बिकॉज मोस्ट वैल्यू इज गेटिंग क्रिएटेड एंड कैप्चर्ड ऑल्सो देर तो वो चेंज करने की जरूरत है बट आई थिंक रिस्पेक्टफुल ऑफ द टाइम आकृत हैज़ वन लास्ट थिंग आई थिंक हाउ डू वी रीड द सीगेट अनाउंसमेंट नाउ $500 billion इट लुक्स लाइक अ जोक नाउ
टारगेट
सॉरी Stargate announcement now, wherein they have announced $500 billion fund in which SoftBank has also participated.
Why do you think SoftBank dropped? So the one of the share prices you didn't show was SoftBank that dropped significantly when DeepSeek...
It looks like a joke now.
Imagine what a crazy week for all of us. Right? This happened on a Monday. Then Thursday this happened. In the middle, there were a couple of other drama that was happening. But some of these... Honestly, you know, you have to be humble and know what you know. I have no idea what their game is. It's a much larger game beyond way beyond all of our paychecks. There's government involved, geopolitics involved. You know, there's Japan now with Masa. You know, interestingly, there was Masa, Larry, Sam. Elon wasn't in the mix. So is this a way to hedge and tell Elon that, listen, you're not all and everything for me? It could be a combination of all of those things. I think the all I can say is that the person who's obviously, it's a high risk, high reward bet for OpenAI. It's the only bet they can make in their context of having to spend billions on compute and lock it in. But look, it could, you know, presidency, government, Elon, it could easily go sideways also. Obviously, it's a great marketing number. We all know that the money invested is going to be a lot smaller to start with. How they're going to get the money, who knows? Even at the time, to be honest, and like I said, DeepSeek had already been out there for a few weeks. Even at the time, my instant takeaway was great marketing headline, geopolitical play, something to do with dynamics that are beyond just requiring so much compute. So who knows? I mean,
what's up? Thought on that.
Remember, US government also has these, every decade they have to spend a lot of money on something, right?
Yeah.
But Elon was very quick to call out, they don't have the money. Finally, there's this whole thing about...
He calls that out, so God knows. It's a lot, okay. Why I say this is, for me, it's a lot more than just an AI announcement.
Yeah.
That's why it's a lot beyond anything I care about or want to even...
It's weirdly becoming a slugfest between all the billionaires in the US, ki bhai, who... can be closest to the government in some way. I think that's what it's getting to be about, which is, I think, their own battle. As you rightly said, I think for us, it's always been what can India do? I would love to obviously see a lot more happening in 2025, a lot more action. And it's great that the government of India has now announced the calling for these proposals and the fact that we should see a lot more innovation now coming out of India. In some way, hopefully, the ventures ecosystem also getting back into action, into a lot more of these innovations versus
Because honestly, I mean, we've had this chat, Akrit, with multiple VCs in the last 6 months, just wondering as to where are the investment opportunities, if not in AI. And everybody kept putting their hand up and said, oh, we don't see that many entrepreneurs in AI. Like, you would love to put a capital, but we don't see that. And I think that cycle should change, because we still, by the way, I think $10 to $12 billion of venture capital gets invested every year in India. For less than $100 billion to go into AI every year, it's a crime, right? So hopefully that's going to change significantly in 2025.
Super. No, yes, thanks, Akrit, for taking our time out of your busy schedule.
Very educational.
No, I'm glad, guys. It's just trying to learning real time. If we do this podcast 1 week later, I may have different things to share.
See you, Akrit. Take care.
Bye. I think interesting, you know, as we get into this Wingify acquisition news, it's very, very interesting. I, of course, know Paras from many years. He's a junior from my college. So that's, of course, is a wow moment for at least my alma mater. I think what is super interesting beyond all of this is that it's a $200 million acquisition buyout of a bootstrapped company, right? 71% is owned by Paras alone. I think the other founder also owns like double digit. So it's a bootstrapped company. They've had many offers in the past in terms of raising, but they decided that we'll have our own independent destiny. And they've built out, it's probably, you know, it has taken them 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
To get here, they are run rating $50 million plus. It's a profitable company, by the way. You know, we were touching upon this topic last time also with Vikram. We were saying, how should founders think? But I think it's a, before we get there, I think it's a celebration of, you know, that companies can be built in a bootstrapped way. I think we end up celebrating a lot more of these fundraisers, et cetera, et cetera. I think this needs like 10x more celebration.
100%.
I think if you just compare, you know, India's largest exit, let's say, is Flipkart, which was done, let's say, at $18 million. Hmm. And I was just checking, Sachin owned 5.5% at that point of time.
Correct.
Right? So it's close to a $1 billion exit for him. If you just compare it, that's the largest one. If you compare it to that, I think... Paras would have alone or founders would have made close to $180-190 million in this deal.
Yeah.
Isn't that phenomenal? You know, and look at the coverage Flipkart would have got, and look at, you know, what Wingify, of course, it was trending on X, etc. But I think, you know, this deserves a lot more accolades, celebration of the ecosystem. How do you guys think, you know, what is changing in India? I think it's a pivotal moment in our country wherein we will see a lot more bootstrapped founders having their own destiny, not raising, deciding to raise money, and build it out over years. You know, that's for sure happening. A lot of people have pinged me and said, wow, we never knew, you know, Wingify is so big. And of course, you know, they have got into the right space. You know, most of the AB, large AB companies, it's an AB testing platform. Most of the large AB companies in the last 6-7 years have been acquired, right? So without going there, how do you see, you guys see the evolution of the ecosystem from here, that, you know, there are these other proven methods of building a company as well. Venture is not the, you know, we keep saying, Revan keeps saying that, you know, venture is not for everyone. I think we now have a real example.
I said it from a different perspective, but yes, still applies to this case as well.
No, you are right, Revan, that there are businesses which probably don't require venture.
Yeah.
And we have seen it the other way also, that, you know, there is this charm. I know a lot of my batchmates who want to start and then raise without even knowing that whether the business actually requires venture money or not.
Yeah.
And you end up realizing 5 years later that, oh, I got on a wrong horse. You know, I have to give them returns, et cetera, et cetera. But would love to hear from you guys.
You also said, made a very interesting point, right? It's been 12, 13 years in the building. 12, 13 years in the building, building it slowly and steadily, getting a team together, and profitable bootstrap. You can't build something over that long a period if you have venture money. There will always be like steroidal push, because, you know, venture fund cycles and return expectations are in conflict with some of this slow build curves. So I think the good part is conscious calls, especially, I see with Paras also, he would have seen multiple booms. He would have seen the 2013, 2014 boom. He would have seen, you know, what happened in 2021. He would have gone through that. He would have gotten a lot of offers. His company would have been bootstrapped and so on for such a long time. But still to resist the temptation of coming in the news, getting a few million dollars to hire some more people. And it also means a lot of work on him and the current team. Like with venture, it becomes easier to kind of get bandwidth and leverage. But to kind of reject it means, you know, you have to take on a lot of the load yourself. It's a difficult day. People think it's just a decision. It's not. The ramifications of the decision on your daily life are very high. But I think you have a long-term view. Ki boss, main khud banaunga, khud se banaunga, and I will do it on my time. And then I will reap the rewards for it. That is a classic example of how you do that really well. And we saw that as minimalists also, right? Obviously, over a shorter window. But again, founders own a chunk and very, very pristine kind of sense of what they wanted to build.
And you know, unlike a, let's say, B2C brand like Minimalist, B2B's, you know, Paras runs a company which is B2B SaaS.
Correct.
B2B SaaS, may, you know, once you have achieved PMF, you have some scale. And he, by the way, from 2010 to 22, at least there is a big wave on SaaS, right? Yeah. Wherein you could easily raise. So yeah, imagine absolutely how he would have resisted that temptation. You know, it requires a lot of mental fortitude to resist and say, main ye nahi karunga, this is not for me. He, in fact, by the way, started another health company in between, in which he raised. He ended up doing like $25, $30 million round. I don't recollect the full extent
million
of it.
$10 million.
$10 million round. He experimented and then he realized that PMF is not there. He's not able to get to PMF. He returned the money. So I think it's mostly got to do with that. It's the thought clarity is like very, very there. Very, very much, yeah, there.
So this is actually a framework for product market fit that was put out by Sequoia Capital US. And I think while this framework is to guide founders on what are the kind of product market fits, I actually use this framework more to design what is the market that you are playing in and whether you should then raise venture capital or not, or how much venture capital should you raise. So I'm using it for a completely different context because I think the theory still holds. So let's understand what this table is, right? What, because the PMF is also with respect to the market. So let me take 5 minutes to explain this table. It's a little, so don't try to read it. I know that, I mean, it's not a presentation where I could show you a nice, you know, appearing transition to say, ab dekho ye. So let's just bear with me on this, right? So the first category I would love to cover is future vision. Are you playing in a market which is where the category is non-existent, where there's absolute disbelief that yaar ye ho bhi sakta hai karke, right? What does it mean? Clear example, 15 years back when Elon Musk said that all vehicles will be electric vehicles. Absolute disbelief, yeah, right? Nobody would believe him at that point of time. Today he's saying we'll go to Mars, right? In some way, I'll simplify it even more. The problem doesn't exist. Nobody is coming and tell you ki Mars jana hai karke. Kyunki aap puchho, jana kyun hai karke, bhai? Right? So that is the category doesn't exist. The problem doesn't exist. Some crazy entrepreneur is coming and saying that, let's solve for this. So the problem doesn't exist, solution doesn't exist. So it's a very futuristic vision. What this means is that you may not even have a working product, let alone revenues, for a very long time. OpenAI, another classic example. Right? This is a very, very, very classical place where you need venture capital. In fact, this is the birth of venture capital, because if you go back to the 1970s, when semiconductors were, you know, the first companies that were building semiconductors, etc., is where venture capital was born. So in a truest sense, that is how venture capital has always worked, in a very, very futuristic vision that this is what the future will look like. Even if you go back to one of the best investments ever, which was Sequoia in Steve Jobs and Apple in late 1970s, it was that every person will have a personal computer at home. This was 1977 or 1978, right? So it was a very futuristic vision that entrepreneurs had, and then VCs would say that, haan yaar boss, aisa kuch hoga to bahut badhiya hoga karke. So it was massive risk reward. Over time, the second market emerged, which was the hard fact market, where the problems exist. Everyone knows the problem, but the solutions are not very clear, or there is a massive existing habit that has to overcome. Classic example, mobility existed. There were cabs in New York City. One guy said, yeah, it's very painful for me to flag a cab and then pay via cash and all of this. Why can't we change our habit where on the mobile phone I can book a cab and things will happen all seamlessly? Offline shopping always existed, right? Everyone bought books offline. One guy said that, why can't you order books online? Then why can't you order CDs online? And then why can't you order everything online, right? So markets always existed, but there were existing habits that needed to be overcome for a new solution to come up. This is the second place where, again, you have to prove something. You have to prove that my solution is better. You have to prove that existing habits will break, new habits will form. Again, there will be a lot of time that you will require to prove this. You will require a lot of money as well to prove this. Correct?
And maybe so because all you're saying that your new solution maybe needs to be 10x better, because otherwise the incumbent will catch up like really quickly.
Correct. So that could be one. Second is, even if it is 10x better, you need to create awareness, consideration. You need to get the first transactions. If you go back to how Uber launched in India, they said, aapko 300 rupees milenge, aap share karo Uber app, samne wale ko 300 rupees, sab Mercedes mein ghum rahe the. Pehle 6 mahine mein, everyone said, oh cool, I downloaded this app and I got a Mercedes mein, mereko ek, you know, 4 kilometer ghum ke aaya karke main. So it required capital to get people to adopt that new solution. Right?
Because look at the last line, append the status quo. It is such a well-crafted articulation of what the solution has to be.
Correct. So this is the second place where venture capital is again used, because you don't know if who will be the winner. Right? You don't know, like if you look at again classically e-commerce, when Amazon entered, Flipkart started, Snapdeal was there. People who were investing in Snapdeal didn't know whether it will be a winner or not. But you had
maybe
to take
the
risk.
Quick commerce play.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the second place where maximum venture dollars ideally should go, because it's very, again, high risk, high reward. Right? These are the two places where highest amount of venture capital has gone in and highest amount of returns have existed, because both of these are power law segments.
Yeah.
These are 20 people won't be able to figure out how to go to Mars. One guy will figure that out. If he figures it out, people who have invested in SpaceX will make 500x returns. If he doesn't, people may not. The different part is obviously he has a great strategy where people are already making a lot of money, because SpaceX is doing a lot more before getting to Mars as well. Right? So is with Tesla. Like as Optimus Prime comes in and suddenly everybody's buying robots for $30,000 that do all the hard work at home, uske pehle car to ban gayi. So he keeps stacking those up, and therefore the futuristic vision, because the guy is such that uska vision, or like 15 years back he said gadi banaunga, 5 saal uske pehle bola main robot banaunga, 5 saal baad bolega wo kuch aur karega. So his futuristic vision keeps getting stacked up. So that's a totally different but OpenAI, for example, is a simple, like 2015 when people put $1 billion, they didn't know what will happen by 2024. And for today, if we look at today's discussion on DeepSeek, maybe it's a full write-off. Maybe $20 billion invested in OpenAI may go to zero. But that is the risk people take in future vision. Right? And therefore, the returns required are also like that. You want a 500x return because the risk you're taking is a lot. In hard facts market, you may get a 100x return, but it's still going to be a very risky investment. Like people who invested in Snapdeal didn't make returns, but people who invested in Flipkart made returns. Right? And therefore, like because we've talked a lot about, and I'm sure our audience keeps hearing that, yeah, VCs ko growth chahiye, growth. Of course, chahiye na, kyunki wo risk, unko lag raha hai risky asset mein ya to zero hai ya to 100x ho jayega.
Correct.
And this is where the third segment comes in, which is the hair on fire, which is a very simple, jaise hum Hindi mein bolte hain, aag lagi hui hai market mein. D2C branch mein aag lagi hui hai, sabko D2C brand khada karna hai. Right? Because everyone, sab Shark Tank pe aa rahe hain, bol rahe hain ki yaar, main ye banaunga aur main 100 crore ka dhanda bana dunga. Right? Or 15 years back, what was a restaurant? Everyone wanted to start restaurants because they said, yaar, khana to aap banai lenge karke, aur khana to sab khayenge karke. Right? These markets are classical examples of hair on fire, where the problem is solved, solution is also solved. The world doesn't need another shampoo. Ek aur shampoo nahi chahiye logo. But koi to aake bolega ki, yaar, main ek shampoo banaunga jisse ye ho jayega.
Yeah.
There is a possibility, right, that you have a very unique solution, but it is a crowded market where unless you have the best-in-class solution, right, and you are not just merely better by 10%, you have to be absolutely different, right, you will be able to create some mark. But again, these are not winner-take-all markets. We know, like, Minimalist is a great brand, is a fabulous outcome for the founders as well as the investors, but in the end, it has maybe, what, 1% market share in the skincare market? It is not like that 1% may go to 5% over the next 20 years or may go to zero also.
Yeah.
Right? But the outcomes are not as extreme as the other two. This is where I think the problem happens, because this is not a very classical venture capital industry. For founders to take venture dollars here in these kind, who are operating in these kind of markets, and say that, yaar, main aram se banaunga, is a conflict. For VCs to invest in this market and expect hyper growth is also a conflict. And I think this is the very classical gap I see in a lot of our India venture investments, because India mein future vision kuch nahi hai. There is no kuch nahi hai. The only place where venture dollars have actually made massive amount of money is in the hard fact markets.
Not
Flipkart, Ola, Urban Company. Like, no one thought you would use an app to do salon service at home, right? But again, it's a very hard fact market. It takes time. It takes 10 years plus to change habits. Aur abhi bhi sirf 5 million logon ki habit badli hai. People who have used, people who have the Urban Company app. The rest, 100 million people who can afford it are still going offline. So it will take 10 more years for Urban Company to become a $250, $300 million or maybe $500, my million dollar revenue company. But they'll get there because they're saying ki hum yahi hard fact market mein chalte rahenge. The beauty is it's a winner take all market, right? And that is what ideally gives the venture returns. All of these companies, Swiggy, Zomato, all of these are prime examples of hard fact markets. Yeah. There are returns in the hair on fire markets. Like a Minimalist is a great example of that. Hair on fire, very unique solution. Quick money in, money out. You will not make a 100x, you will make a 10x. But expectations have to be very clear. Ki boss, this is not a 100x game. And I think that expectation mismatch, yaar, aap kaun se market mein khel rahe ho, ye business kaise design hona chahiye, is the gap that we had over the last 10 years, which is improving. Now VCs are also realizing that, yaar, haan, yaar, matlab, this is not a market that where we'll be able to make 100x, right? But are their fund sizes commensurate to that? For example, there was another debate I saw on X, I think this week only, where USV, which is one of the best venture funds in the US, raised its 8th or 9th fund at $250 million. They could have raised $2 billion if they needed. But they said for the last 10 years, 12 years, we know what we know. We know that we want skin in the game. We want to make sure that if we do 20 investments, or each of those 20, we want to be really high conviction. So if you raise a large fund and do a 3 million seed, it's like an option check. But if we do a 250 million fund and do a 2.5-5 million investment, then it's not an option check for us, right? So alignment between VC, founder, all of that is very perfect for small funds. When you have a large fund and you are doing, let's say, a hair on fire market, like a B2B SaaS, which is, as you said, Chirag, once you have PMF, it's profitable. And it grows on its own. You don't need to like, aag lagane ki zarurat nahi hai aapko. Minimalist like D2C yeah. brand, once they have PMF, they were profitable from day one. And they kept going at a certain pace.
I think, Revat, we confuse, I think you put it rightly, but I think hume aisa lagta hai ki sari markets mein na market share jeet ke game jeeti aati hai.
Correct.
Right, and hence you require money.
Correct.
Right, but all markets are not same. As you are saying that some markets by nature are going to be fragmented. Right.
Correct.
Consumer brands will not have a winner take all
Yeah.
But and I like market share is also, they're also market share. So for example, if you see Unilever's results or their management presentation, they will talk about how much market share they have in skincare, in haircare, etc. Because eventually it's still market share. But you will have max 25% market share. Maybe something like Chyawanprash, where Dabur will say we have 60% market share, will exist. Right? But B2B SaaS mein or consumer brands mein, you will always end up like at least startups can best case aim for 2-3 market share of a very large market like skincare or haircare. Unless you are doing something like a hard fact. So this is the reason I really like this framework is because I use it myself with my own team and with all our shareholders. That health and wellness is not a hair on fire market. Maybe protein is now. But if you ask Sameer Maheshwari at HealthCard ki bhai jab wo 12 saal pehle se bol rahe protein low, kabhi nahi tha hair on fire. Unko 10 saal lage in a hard fact market. And markets also evolve. Markets also change over time where habits change. Now maybe protein over the next 5 years becomes hair on fire. But you will see that proliferation where everyone wants to now do protein. Right? For us, when we are saying magnesium supplement low, aap sone ke liye, it's a hard fact. Nobody takes magnesium in this country. So it's a hard fact market. So it will take a lot of time for us to create that habit. But once we create it, it will not be about 1 or 2% market share. But the reason Muscle Place today has 33% market share in the protein market because wo bichare 12-13 saal se lage hue hai yaar ki protein low. That's why they have 30% market share. And now as the market grows, it's a classical example of do you want to be a small fish in a big pond or do you want to be a big fish in a small pond and hope that the pond grows over time? That's the difference between these two markets in mind.
And the water does not
dry. I also feel like it also affects the way investing happens. And you're right, because if you look at classical consumer investors, like we did a pod with Deepak Shahdadpuri recently, he said the same thing. Boss, I will want to do, I do. I used to earlier think in my first or second fund, especially after the Sula success, I used to think that in a portfolio of 10 companies, one or two will have to become the power law, right? One or two have to become successful. Then mentally you start writing off companies and, you know, you start not investing in bad times. And then the winners don't give you like 100x, right? And then you suddenly realize that ye chalega nahi yaar, apne in hair on fire or in our ecosystem, for example, you say, I'll back, and like this, like the venture capital fund you're talking about, I'll back 10, 20 companies maybe. And I'll make sure that at least 50% of them give me like, you know, 3 to 5x. And only the ones that really struggle will have to kind of get written off. So the distribution of returns is very different. I think that's the evolution that will be needed. And only then does it make sense to kind of raise venture from such.
Yeah, or match with the right kind of VCs. Right?
Exactly.
Like we had this debate, I think 3 or 4 episodes back, where one of our, like, we are a common angel in that company. And there was a discussion that why would he raise from a smaller fund and leave the offer from the bigger fund. But I think it was more alignment by the founder saying that the smaller fund ke liye na, wo din raat mere saath kaam karege, I'm not an option check.
Right? Yeah.
I will not have the pressure to grow very fast because it's a small fund. They don't need to me to become 100x for that fund return. So I think entrepreneurs are also now slowly realizing that as the VC ecosystem is deepening, there is more. Actually, जैसे बचपन का याद है ना, मैच तो फॉलोइंग करते थे, थोड़ा सा वो हो सकता है अभी. इट्स नॉट कि यही चार पूल ऑफ कैपिटल है, सबको इधर ही जाना है.
I want to come back to the Wingify one, Revanth. When you both have more experience, what does the fund like Everstone kind of get out of this? Like, how do they think of a buyout?
Why do we have more experience? I don't think we have more experience. But very simple. Once you have a very strong PMF business, then you believe that a professional can run it. First, I think the CEO is staying on, right? The CEO is staying on and will continue to build. And I'm sure there'll be earnouts over time, right? So nothing is changing. It's not like Paras was spending 8 hours in the day with Wingify, right? He was anyway, as Chirag said, wo to alag business bana raha, he's just a shareholder now. He's been a shareholder for the longest time. So the business is in auto mode. So it's a great acquisition for someone who says that, yeah, let me spend $200 million to take this business. If this business goes from 50 million ARR to looks like a 100 million ARR or a 150 million ARR in the next 5 years, I will then flip it and sell it to an Advent or a Bain or a KKR at 3x the price. That's how typical private equity works, right? Now the difference
will be
is...
a yield business for them, yeah.
It's an IRR business. Right, so you can be put 200 million in, let's take the latest few deals, right? Temasek and KKR put 210 or 250 million dollars in Rebel Foods, right? Because they are hoping that Rebel will obviously compound from here and will go IPO, and over the next 5 years they'll earn 25% IRR there, right? That is one kind of deal. But how many such assets can you do in India? So as fund sizes have grown larger, it's hard to take minority positions when you don't want to deploy 200 million. So buyouts have always existed for this case. And large PE funds do both. So a Kedara, you know, all of these guys who are 2 billion plus as a fund size, if they have to deploy 100 million minimum check sizes, kitne hi deal kaise karoge aap 3 saal? You will have to find so few buyouts as well. If you go back, even Sequoia did a Faces Cosmetics buyout. No? Technically, they owned most of the company. So it's a question of where do you make IRR math? And as a money manager, whether you take 5%, 10% or 80%, the only difference is PE funds usually, even if they take 20%, they prefer to get in their operating team, right? So an Everstone, whenever they take 20, 25, 30% also, would have an entire team to say that, yaar, achha, tu CFO rahega, isko leke aao, ye sales karega, ye professional CEO hoga. So they are very, very familiar with this model. Whether they take 20% or 80%, we will put in the team and we will manage this company. So it's bread and butter for them. It's not any different from what they do with minority investments.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I was looking at, you know, this chart of, I don't know if you guys saw, that how has private equity like created value over years. Earlier, you know, go back 4 decades, most of the value came from leverage, as in you buy a company at less PE multiple and get it listed. Leverage, as in you put in, do more leverage buyouts, infuse debt in the company, and the company's cash flows service that debt through its own cash flows. That's how you would expand. And then in between, in 1990s, we saw an era where there was multiple expansion, that you would buy a company at lower PE multiple and then get it listed or sell it, combine it with few other assets and sell it at a higher multiple. I think all those arbitrages have gone down. Largely, what is now remaining is what I think you guys were also hinting, that it's mostly got down to operational improvements. That can you be more efficient? Can you combine few assets and then improve the overall assets? If you look at it this from this lens, it does look like that, you know, you got to get your management who's known to work with private equity guys, who knows how to like run a lean operating ship and knows that, okay, end goal is that we have to get listed or we have to combine few assets and ensure that operating leverage is there. It's mostly getting down to that. I think all the leverage seen or the arbitrage between multiples is probably minimal now.
I agree. It'll have to be through actual value. And leverage also expensive now. People have figured out that financial engineering doesn't work anymore.
Alok it did when the interest costs were zero, na?
Maybe Alok. If you see between the decades and map interest, then kuch nikal ke aayega
usme. Oh, 1970s, 80s wala jo hai, Masa Son ka wo pura playbook has come from there only, no? Alok Sama has written so well about it. Yaar. It's I don't know if you guys have had the time to read the book, but yeah, a big fan of it. But yeah, good news for Paras and the ecosystem. And I think just hopefully with venture also, I think it kind of aligns people on what outcomes could be if capital and people are kind of efficiently deployed.
I think another interesting thing which maybe we want to touch upon is that people are making this prediction that India, after this, that India is likely less than 1 year away from a $1 billion M&A in tech. Right? I think, you know, does it... I think we've had B2C exits in the past. I don't recollect a lot of these tech M&As which have happened. There have been M&A in the call center space which have happened, but very few in tech. How does this start to look like from a, you know, is there more acceptance now for B2B SaaS companies or B2B software companies that, you know, India can also build a world-class product? And hence, you know, there is reason and maybe, you know, cash exits have been far and few. And now you can search for like good assets in India, which are scalable and are global in nature. Maybe that's starting to change. I think for me, it's a little bit of, you know, coming up of the ecosystem that some of these global M&A, global companies, global private equity companies, as well as global tech companies looking at India as M&A options as well, which is quite fascinating.
Yeah, totally agree. Ho sakta hai moment.
Yeah, 2025 looks like ho sakta hai, ho raha sab jagah.
Episode 12 is ho sakta hai.
We should asymmetric and optimistic aisa kuch banana padega.
Optimistically asymmetric.
Yes.
What's up with you guys? Catch up.
I had my first green recovery.
Yaar, what is that?
So basically, I got my sleep to 100% finally. Like Brian Johnson, ka matlab jo raha ki, I don't know if you know, Brian Johnson has 100% sleep every day. So
8 months regular.
Sorry?
So Whoop shows you that this is the amount of number of hours of sleep you need to take. And if you take that amount of sleep, number of hours, quantity, then that is calculated as sleep performance. Right, that's the metric. He's been saying that he has been on 100% sleep performance for last 8 months consecutively. Wow. I can't even do it for 3 days.
That's his full-time job, man. I don't think it's a full-time job.
Full-time job is sleeping.
Yeah, sleeping. That's what insane.
Even my kid is jealous of this.
He's not... But look at the science behind it. He'll figure out, catch up. You know, at this point, if I eat this or if I drink this, then and if I get exposed to this light and that light. But music is better because my nervous system, while it gets activated, but the counter is so... The science and experiment, insane. The A-B testing is insane.
But so, I did the same thing. So yesterday, for example, so my reason, my recovery was never in green, was a little bit on sleep performance, which is, it was 85-90, but it was still not 100. Okay. Then the resting heart rate was too high and the HRV was too low. So two, three things I did. Yesterday, my last meal was 7 p.m.
Okay.
Okay, so it was 3.5 hours before I went to sleep. I actually did not do water after 9 p.m. So I tried 2 hours, but 9 p.m. was the last quarter. I didn't do screen. I tried 1 hour, but in 10 baje I shut off all screens, kept the phone outside. And so there's a full routine that he says, pura dark out karo, book padho, right? And I had magnesium gummies at 9:30. Then 10 o'clock I started reading a book. And 10:30 I was out. And boss, I had struggled waking up today morning. Like it was such a nice, like I've had 4.5 hours of restorative sleep, deep plus REM. So everything needs to come through. So caffeine also. Yesterday I didn't have caffeine. So you have to keep doing these small things. But these are not big changes, yeah? Not having coffee after 11 in the morning is not a big thing, yeah? Have your coffee in the morning.
Toh night wala hi nahi hota hai. I'm telling you, if I eat the meal at 7 p.m., na, I'll be again hungry at 10.
I was hungry at 10. But actually, that is the other place where I realized, Shantanu, where the gummies help. Because when you take the gummy compared to a tablet, so actually, ye bhi soch chirag. Jab tu wo gummy leta na, toh sweet hoti hai. So, what is two things? When you're hungry, effectively, if you take, it's fiber, so it's not sugar. But because it's a sweet, chewy thing, you feel like you're eating something. Tu thela na hunger thoda better ho jata.
Pata laga main 3-4-5 kha gaya aise.
Nahi nahi, aise kuch nahi hoga. Kafi
acha lag raha
hai. So,
yeah, but do three to khai sakte ho.
Nahi nahi, why? It's enough. Anyway, that's a separate topic. But coming back, I don't know if I can do it every day, but at least now that I know.
You know the formula, then you can trigger.
Correct. So, my second was HRV, right? My HRV was too low. So, yesterday I had workout. And usually when I work out, I don't do 10,000 steps. But yesterday I did 10,000 steps bhi kiye. Aur workout bhi kiya. My HRV went up immediately. बहुत ही क्लियर मार्कर्स है यार कि अभी तुम्हारे कंट्रोल में ना इफ यू कैन वॉक 10,000 स्टेप्स एवरी डे नॉट हैव कॉफी आफ्टर 11 नॉट हैव एनी फूड आफ्टर 7 और वट एवर 8 लाइक 3-3.5 hours बिफोर यू वॉन्ट टू स्लीप यू कैन स्लीप एट 12 ऑल्सो इन द 12 AM ऑल्सो बट डोंट हैव एनीथिंग आफ्टर देन 8:39 राइट मतलब बेस इज दैट छोटी छोटी चीजें हैं यार आई डिडंट वेक अप फॉर टू गो टू द रेस्ट रूम बिकॉज आई डिडंट हैव वाटर दैट लेट. That's the other thing, right? You don't need to wake up if your water intake stops, let's say, 2 hours before. And I think the game changer is keeping the phone outside.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's eerie, yaar. But I've stopped reading books. I'm so used to listening on Audible or doing Kindle when traveling. So physical books, bale padhi rehti hai, wo 5 minutes mein aise eyes drool hone lag gaye na, wo padh ke. To college ki yaad aa gayi, jaise you know, exam ke liye padhai shuru karte hai, fir neend aa rahi hai, yaar.
You should, by the way, also try this. Huberman has this non-sleep deep rest. 10-minute, 20-minute protocol. It's quite good.
In the day?
Many people swear by it.
Anytime you can try. It's like quite refreshing.
Din mein kaise karega? Office mein baithe?
10 minutes you got to sit, na?
Meditation hai basically.
Huh.
Achha, meditation hai. Mere ko laga 10 minute ka power nap hai.
No. Non-sleep deep rest.
A lot of people swear by it. Like people think that sleep is like this whole chaotic activity. Meditation is like conscious rest.
No, iska bhi wo hai na. So by the way, my last final thing that I have to now solve is the mouth breathing versus the nose breathing. So I told you guys, right? Like I did that experiment with mouth tape and then with the nose strip. It was too cumbersome. I find it very odd. So I stopped it again. But I saw distinct RHR reduction when I was very, very clearly nose breathing versus mouth breathing. And the answer is very simple. So there is a sympathetic nervous system, there is a parasympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system is, jab tere samne sher aayega na, to teri fat legi. So that's when your sympathetic nervous system, like it's like the stress and fear, it's like alert ho jate ho to wake up, right? Or when you're a roller coaster, like sher aage to is a very unlikely possibility, but yeah. Mouth breathing, unfortunately, keeps your sympathetic nervous system active. Whereas nose breathing, which is what pranayam or yoga, etc., this is a breathing practice karo, is actually to activate your parasympathetic nervous system, which is like, boss, relax ho jao karke.
Relax,
so it's a nervous system that gets activated. So, I mean, I know people will say ki, bhai, hamare yoga mein aur, you know, hamare rigved mein sab likha hua tha, tum sab ye Huberman karke, but actually answer wahi hai. Ki, if you can breathe through your nose in a very specific, like if you practice breathing and stuff, automatically your nervous system, that is the parasympathetic nervous system, gets activated. And if that is active, automatically your RHR will also come down because it will be like tell the body to relax. Whereas if your sympathetic nervous system is active, even if you're sleeping, your RHR remains a little high.
So mere liye wo ab seems like because I'm a mouth breather, it's a big problem for me. So which I need to now solve over time, and I'm hopefully looking for something that doesn't feel very awkward, because you know putting that tape and putting that mouth tape, yaar ajeeb lagta hai sote waqt. So you know, I don't feel comfortable while sleeping. So nobody's figured out a very aesthetic, not visual, because nobody's watching me while I'm sleeping. But at least it should feel not alien when, you know, stuff is on your face and stuff.
You never know, Revanth. You never know what Aarti is doing when you're sleeping. Maybe she is watching.
You okay. Do need to be visually aesthetic.
If that is what gets her off, then it's okay.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree. One of my friends, actually, my senior from college, in fact, was a minimalist for a while. He's entering the world of sleep apnea in terms of healthcare and devices and workshops. So, workshop kiya unhone abhi hamare office mein ki sote kaise hain. To ekdam bahut hi, he was at L'Oreal. He was like the MIS. He was like the brain of L'Oreal. All the MISs and all the data of L'Oreal came to this one guy who was like this Excel freak. College mein bhi waise hi the wo. Then he was a minimalist, and now he's doing this. So ekdam superb guitarist, like very, very cool guy. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with this.
Usko bol yaar thoda kuch, you know, ye now
connect karoge aapko main.
हाँ बोलना
बहुत बहुत रिसर्च किया होगा उसने, लाइक नोइंग हिम ही वुड नो दिस टॉपिक इनसाइड आउट.
बिल्कुल, मैं बाकी सब कर चुका हूँ. मैं लेफ्ट साइड सोना है, राइट साइड सोना है, सर का पोजीशन, लाइक ये सब सिंपलर सॉल्व है. हाउ टू सॉल्व फॉर नेजल ब्रीदिंग विच विल अलाउ डीप ब्रेथ्स, बिकॉज आई डोंट नो बाय द वे अदर थिंग आई रियलाइज, इफ यू ट्राई टू टेक ब्रेथ थ्रू योर माउथ, इट बिकम्स शॉर्टर ब्रेथ्स. यू कांट टेक अ वेरी डीप लॉन्ग ब्रेथ थ्रू योर माउथ, व्हेयरएज नोज अलाउज यू टू डू दैट. दैट्स द अदर प्लेस, राइट? लाइक व्हाट इज ब्रीदिंग एक्सरसाइज, इट दैट्स हाउ द parasympathetic nervous system also is activated. It's very deep, long breaths. So, you know, these things require, I think, some help, because we have not exercised these muscles for long. I mean, I know technically people will say, yaar, yoga kar le, ek saal theek ho jayega karke. But, thoda short kar do,
ye toh better. Comment ye aane wala, Baba Ramdev ban gaye is bari.
But Revan, one thing which my mom, who teaches yoga, tells me is when you breathe in with through your nose, what happens to your belly? Does it expand or contract?
Expands.
It expands, right?
It's not supposed to expand.
A lot of people, it contracts. It's supposed to expand. Many people breathe into the chest and the belly contracts, which is the wrong way to breathe. Take the breath completely into the belly. So the belly fully should expand and contract when you are breathing out. So if you can feel that happening, which is how a baby sleeps actually, that's the best way to breathe. And it's a massive unlock around relaxation and like this. A lot of people just say that if you breathe right, that's 90% of your health solved.
Should
if
we get someone right on the podcast? Maybe if people want to, like, I know the health and wellness section is the last 5-10 minutes only, but in case people who watch the health and wellness section every time want us to invite an expert on this, because we are only effectively experimenting with our bodies and giving some, you know, just general discussing. So if you guys want someone as an expert to come in and maybe have a 20-minute segment on these things, would be happy to oblige. So please drop in your comments. Whoever's listening at the end of this hour and a half hour podcast, or maybe directly skip to the health and wellness section.
No, we should. I think it's a very interesting topic.